Hello and happy Saturday to everybody out there. You're listening to The Crow's Nest. I'm Thomas III, and we're here with Dr. Crow.
How you doing? Good morning.
Oh, doing pretty good. And Dr. Crow, we had something come across in the news that I wanted to get your opinion on. Coming out of Hartford, Connecticut, there was a lady that was actually applying for a job. I believe it was at a nursing home. And had been offered the job basically saying, as long as you pass the drug test, then this job is yours. And so she told the nursing home that she had a medical marijuana. I believe it was some in the pill form, and let them know ahead of time. And then whenever she failed the drug test, then they rescinded the offer. And so this has been in a federal court now. And I guess last month, they actually ruled in favor of her, saying that the nursing home broke anti-discrimination laws that were implemented as a result of the medical marijuana being passed. Now, my question to you is, how big is this, first off, as far as like on a scale of, you know, how much this is going to impact things, and how could this impact the federal versus state law, the battle that we've seemed to have been going through almost since our country has started?
Oh, it has been, yeah. And again, it is a federal state issue, because the federal law was, I mean, you know, there's anti-marijuana laws at the federal level because of how marijuana is labeled under federal laws. And of course, the problem with this was the nursing home was getting, I guess, federal aid, and so the feds had, I guess, their hands in this. But the state had an anti-discrimination law, so it's not a federal anti-discrimination law, it's a state anti-discrimination law. And so the question was, on this one, it was between a federal law governing marijuana use, whereas the states had okayed this for medical marijuana, and then the states had an anti-discrimination law. So again, the battle was between which one's going to take precedent, that is, or which one's going to be more important. Is it going to be the federal law against marijuana, or is it going to be the state law that says you can do this, and then the state law having being an anti-discrimination law? And on this one, it looks like the courts ruled for the state. Here that the anti-discrimination law was valid, and so I'm sure that this will go on up to the Supreme Court, and we'll have to see. But the ramifications are greater than just marijuana laws. You can see this in other states, whether we're talking about gun laws, whether we're talking about abortion. Are the states going to have the last word, or is the federal government going to have the last word?
So it's basically just getting back to who kind of pulls rank.
That's right. And of course, the weapon that the states that the federal government usually pulls is, of course, withholding federal funds. But then one has to wonder, well, where does the federal government get their funds from? And of course, that's citizens who are also citizens of states. A lot of times when people will talk about the involvement of the feds in schools, in schools, and people will say, well, if the state government wouldn't just take money from the feds in their schools, then the feds wouldn't have any say so in schools. But the problem is the federal government will say, okay, fine, we won't just withhold your funds from schools, we'll hold them from your highway funds. And that's really how they get states on board, is they threaten to take their highway money away. And what's weird is that doesn't just give them say-so over your laws governing speed limit, but then it gives them say-so over your schools too. So,
and that really kind of reminds me of the stance that the tribes have been taking on this medical marijuana issue. It's been pretty resounding from most of the tribes that I've heard that have even made a statement on it, and from IHS and these different entities that are tribally related, that they're coming from the side of, well, it's still illegal federally, and we're still on federal trust land, and so we have to go by the federal law because that's what the federal law says, and we're not governed by the state. So how could this ruling, if it is ruled for the state, could that affect the way that that tribes have that relationship with the federal government as well, as far as making their own laws and being able to make laws that would supersede the federal government law?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you would have some precedent there to a degree. Again, the problem that a lot of the tribes have is our federal dollars. I mean, that's how the feds have kind of won out over the tribes, is withholding money, things of this nature. And so the tribes are in the exact same position that the states are. To get more free of those federal regulations, they need to be free of those federal dollars as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems that I've always had with tribes calling themselves sovereign whenever they're not freestanding. You know, as long as I feel like as long as you're taking federal funds and you're not able to control your own schools and control your own infrastructure and control your own emergency management and, you know, law enforcement and all these kind of things, if you're not in complete control of that and control of having your own income stream and using that for your budget, then you'll never really be sovereign.
Exactly. And of course, the tribes have two battles. One would be against against the federal government, but then there's also sometimes problems between the tribes and state governments as well, which is another thing, you know, that again, you have to watch where that money goes and everything. You don't want that held over you either.
Yeah, and there are a lot of tribes that are still fighting for federal recognition, but they're recognized within the state. And so they get state funding, but then they don't get federal funding. So it's pretty interesting to think about how this is going to affect everything else, because you mentioned that this could affect a lot of other areas other than just marijuana laws.
Exactly.
And so what are some of these other laws that could really come into that this could come into play where states are going to be able to kind of force their will?
Well, and see, and this is an issue that cuts across the left-right spectrum that we tend to think of. In other words, when we're talking about marijuana laws, usually the ones that would liberalize marijuana laws, those would usually be supported by sometimes, you know, liberals maybe, but also libertarians, but a lot of conservatives would oppose it. But then on the other hand, when you get into laws governing abortion, if we go back to Roe versus Wade is not a battle about, it's not a battle necessarily about, in other words, if Roe versus Wade was overturned, that doesn't mean that the ability of a person to have an abortion is overturned. What it does is it overturns the federal law that guarantees that you have a right for an abortion. In other words, it would go back to the states. So it would be basically pretty much the same. It's the same type of battle that we see fought out over the legalization of marijuana. In other words, is it the state that's going to decide that issue, or is it the federal government that's going to decide that issue? So again, if this precedent is set with that the states are going to have more say-so in marijuana, then that could also play the same. That could also be the undermining of Roe versus Wade, which would throw that issue back to the states as well, because both of those are state-federal issues.
Yeah, I could see that. And how is this going to affect like you were talking about gun laws?
Same thing there. For example, you have federal bans on automatic weapons to a degree, machine guns. You have to have to have a machine gun, again, not semi-automatic, but full automatic. You have to have a federal license for that. Now, theoretically, you know, again, people could say, well, that's against our Second Amendment right. We ought to be able to have any type of gun. And if you threw it back to the states, you know, if the states could decide, maybe they would allow people, I don't know a state that would, but they could, you know, they might allow people to have a machine gun or whatever. But the feds would say, no, we have laws on the book that forbid that at the federal, you know, as a national law. But again, that could go be thrown back to the states as well. So the ramifications of this court case, wherever it decides, is going to affect not only questions about legalization of marijuana, but it could affect abortion law. It could affect laws governing firearms, just about almost anything you could think of.
So where does this case go from here? Because I know it said that they didn't rule in favor of her being compensated for because she had to take a lesser paying job than what she had actually been offered. And so, but they said that, I guess in the next step, then that would be whenever they would decide if she would be compensated or not. So what would be the next step from this federal judge? Does it just keep on going until
you keep on going until you get to the Supreme Court ultimately? Yeah.
So this is one of those things that it kind of emphasizes the importance of getting a judge in there, right? Well, to make your nine justices, because if something this big was to come up and make it to the Supreme Court before we figure out what's going on with Kavanaugh and they have to vote, then you don't have that tiebreaker.
That's right. That's right. And it's very likely you would have a tie on this. You know, this is another thing about the Supreme Court too. If the Supreme Court starts ruling in favor of states, ironically, over time, if that becomes the norm, that the states win, the ironic thing is the Supreme Court in time will become more irrelevant, and it will go back to the legislature, legislative battles that will be more important. In other words, what laws are going to be passed not only in the state but at the national level. In other words, you can change the Constitution. Right now, the battle is over. You know, the main battleground between the left and right is how are we interpreting the Constitution. The founding fathers thought that this battle should be fought over legislatively. In other words, or through the people directly. In other words, amend the Constitution or whatever, that the federal courts would have been irrelevant. And what's happened in America now that the country's become so divided is we allow the courts to decide things. But that wasn't the way that it was originally supposed to operate. Originally, the courts were only, we say they're supposed to interpret. Really, what they were. What they were supposed to do was uphold the Constitution, not make law, but just uphold it and say, this is what the law says. But because things have become so heated, we've almost let them make law to a degree.
And that's the interpretation part. Do you think that has something to do with the language that's used and how language changes over time?
Some of it is, I'll just put it this way, and this has gone both for the left and the right. Sometimes they're very creative of how they interpret it. Does that make sense? You can almost put something in there.
Yeah.
And the thing is people have not called the courts, both left and right, for years on, well, there's no way you can read that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So could this, I guess ironically, could this ruling eventually make the state courts more powerful than the Supreme Court?
Could be. I mean, again, if we start ruling in favor of the states more, again, then the federal courts become more irrelevant over time.
So where do you...
Could, at least, that's a possibility.
Where do you think they draw the line at? Because, I mean, taking this a little bit off of track, if this was to be ruled, you know, a couple hundred years ago, then slavery might still be legal.
Ideally, the place where you should draw the line is if it's in our Bill of Rights. In other words, if it interferes with your constitutional rights, then that's where you should draw the line. But if it doesn't, then, you know, I mean, then...
Then you get back to that interpretation part, right?
That's
because
it.
Then you're talking about... You know, there was a lot of argument back then that, well, black people weren't considered a full person, and so they didn't get all the rights that a person was basically granted as your
well,
Bill of Rights.
And actually, the Constitution, what the Constitution basically does is, you know, people think that the Constitution grants us rights. What the Constitution does is it protects our rights. We already have them, and it's basically... sets up a barrier that it lays out what the government cannot do. And by the government, it specifically, if you look at this, you know, if you look at the first 10 amendments, it basically means the legislature. The legislature, the Congress, it says Congress shall not. And then you get these, different things that Congress cannot do if you look at the Constitution. So the Bill of Rights itself is set up to limit what Congress can do. Limit what, you know, in other words, you know, Congress shall or Congress shall not. And so there are certain laws, unless we change the Constitution, there are certain things that the government's not supposed to be able to do.
So I'm kind of thinking about different ways that this could really affect other things that are going on. And another big battle that's going on right now is with net neutrality.
Yes.
And we have a government, a state government in California that has a whole lot of power because of its market size and the amount of markets that it actually has and the amount of people there that are enacting a net neutrality law that U.S. government doesn't agree with. And so we have a battle there. So could this precedence affect that battle as well?
It could affect any of these. And that's why I say these cases literally cut across the bounds between what we normally think of as left or right. You know, if you throw it to the states, then it's actually closer to what the people in those states believe, what they want. And traditionally, at least originally, if you look at the way the U.S. Constitution was set up, you know, you have that 10th Amendment, which basically says, look, here's the other 9 amendments. These are the ones that guarantee your rights. And the 10th Amendment says, if it's not in there, the states decide. That's what was supposed to happen. Because if you think about it, think how diverse this country is and what the will of people is. And you can see that we always say, you know, we're one nation. Don't get me wrong. I'm not wanting the country to break up. I'm very patriotic in that sense. But the sense of a nation being a people, that's not necessarily true. I mean, the people of New York, the will of the people of New York is not the same as the will of the people of Oklahoma. It's not the same as the will of the people of Wyoming. And the more local you get, the more you can actually be in keeping with what people really desire. And the scary thing about contemporary politics is, and this is what even disturbs me about how this battle over the Supreme Court is raging, is we've got to this point in the country that every side wants to impose their will on everybody else. Yeah. I mean, we want everybody to think this way. And that's true left and right. You know, we want well, that's hard to do. You need to take it down to a smaller level. I mean, people in various locations, they know what they want. And it's different from what people in other areas want. And so, in a way, this states' rights stuff, I think, may ease tensions in the country. If we move things back to the state and if people minded their own business instead of worrying what somebody else a long way away, you know, that where they have a completely different way of seeing the world, what they're doing, that's not their business maybe. So, I mean, it would be nice maybe to go back to the states to a degree. As long as we don't deny, you know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, as you said. You know, you can't just judge people by race or whatever. But that's a constitutional right. That is life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. But other than that, it would be nice maybe if it went back to the states.
And we're even starting to see a little bit of a battle between these local municipalities, whether it be cities or counties, and kind of going against what the state has said as far as allowing medical marijuana. You know, some of these states and counties are starting to try to bring legislation to say, well, you're not going to be able to have a dispensary in our city or city limits or in our county. How is that going to work? Is it just going to be just basically like the dry counties in Texas and Oklahoma?
And again, that does work. I mean, to a degree, places where I grew up in Arkansas, dry counties where the people are overwhelmingly for that, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if that's the way it is, the people that live there, they know. I mean, that place may have had trouble with alcohol abuse or whatever in the past, and that may be what they want. And that should not bother somebody from a city thinking, well, I can't get a drink. Well, then move. I mean, in other words, different people have a different worldview. In other words, they know what their community wants, and I'm all for that. And by the same token, I don't think that some fundamentalists should go to New York City and say, well, we're not going to have any alcohol, because the fact is, if that's what people want, it's going to, you know, if you go against the vast majority, you're going to create criminals, basically, is what you're going to do. You're going to anytime you criminalize the behavior of the vast majority, it's just not going to work.
Well, we saw that with prohibition. Yeah. I mean, you know, back in the 20s, I mean, how many years did that last? It was obvious that people didn't want that.
That's right.
But they wanted their alcohol.
But then again, there are places that want to be dry.
Yeah.
And there it works just fine.
And isn't that the essence of what government is supposed to be? Is basically, you know, the city or the county or whatever you're voting in those elections to have a say in that little area. And then whoever is representing your county, you know, it goes into the bigger part as far as like not just your county, but like your district or whatever.
Exactly.
And then that goes, you know, they go into the legislature of the state and make laws there for the state. And then you have people that represent the state to go into the federal government, you know. And so I can see how that kind of goes with the model of what our government is supposed to be. And I'm trying to figure out how this is going to work out for the tribes. And maybe it's a thing that is going to be as simple as just getting people more involved in the politics and going to these meetings and letting their voice be heard. But you know, tribal politics is just a little bit different, and you kind of have to, I guess, take the good with the bad. And so I'm hoping that what we're going to get out of this is actually people being able to make their own mind up about all this stuff at a smaller level. But when are we going to see, is this going to be a ruling that's going to force the federal government to declassify marijuana?
Well, that's a good question. Again, it depends on how many cases like this the states win. But again, even if the Supreme Court rules that the states have the ability to overrun this, then it really won't matter, because state would take precedent over federal law then at that point. And this, by the way, there is precedent for this. I'll give you an example. In 1997, there was a case, Prince and Mack versus the U.S., where that ruled that in a county, the sheriff has a lot of say-so. The sheriff actually has more say-so a lot of times than federal officials. I mean, your sheriff department has more say-so often than the FBI does. People think, well, the FBI can come in and run the show. You see this on TV. They bring in the FBI, you know, to investigate something. The fact is, sheriff departments could throw out the FBI if they want to, because the sheriff departments, and this goes back to English common law, they are selected by the people directly. And they actually have more say-so at a local level than a federal agency does. By the way, the same thing of this. The EPA came in to an area. The sheriff department could force them out even. I mean, because it is the direct representative of the people. And again, you can go back to this case in 97. If anybody wants to look that up, it'd be a Prince and Mack versus the U.S. And so there is some precedent for upholding, you know, local authorities over the federal government.
Well, this is going to be interesting to see how much this really affects. And there's so many laws that I think that we're coming into times that they couldn't have predicted back whenever the founding fathers were, you know, writing the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and all that. You know, they couldn't have foreseen that we would need laws about net neutrality or, no, you know, laws about, you know, certain things like that. So there's a lot of this that's just kind of, I guess, just being kind of made up as we go along.
Well, I think the one thing that the founding fathers did see, though, is how different the states were, how diverse, even at that point, and you're only talking about a few million people at that time. Now we're 320 million. But even then, that South Carolina was different than Pennsylvania, is different than New York, and that, you know, yes, you have to guarantee the rights of people as individuals, but there needs to be a little local diversity in there, you know, for people to decide what's better for them. And that's a piece of wisdom that the founding fathers did have.
And, you know, it's always been interesting to me how that the government of the United States was kind of modeled after the Iroquois Confederacy.
That's right. Yum.
And how they had their government set up. And it's really, it's almost it's a good blueprint that I wish that the tribes could get together and come up with the same kind of government, But just, you know, each tribe is individual tribe, but then all together they can make laws for that govern, you know, Indian land.
Yeah.
And what is considered trust land, and to govern the laws that basically are in place in those places. So, you know, casinos, you know, I always thought there should be no reason why the state can tell a tribe whether they can have a casino or not. And that was always kind of a big thing that held a lot of Oklahoma tribes back, because there were tribes in Louisiana and Florida and, you know, these different places, California, that had such a head start on Indian gaming that they were setting their casinos up, you know, 20, 30 years before Oklahoma got their first one. And so it kind of... I want to see the tribes kind of take that power back, or realize that they have that power, because if all the tribes were to get together and pool resources and, you know, say that, look, we control all this oil land, all this farming and grazing land, and all the casinos that, you know, is so much involved in the tourism and everything like that of places like Oklahoma, that, you know, before we had the NBA, there was no other reason to really come to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Besides, like, maybe college football or, you know, something like that. But it was, you know, the casinos have really done a lot to kind of boost that economy, I think, and boost the tourism of people that were coming in and out. So, you know, I think it's probably going to be good all the way around to be able to see a little bit more of that power go back to kind of the smaller areas like that, to where... Well,
and, you know, one of the ways I always define myself as a conservative, and for me, one of the things that means is for a people to be able to determine, you know, their destiny. And wouldn't it be nice, not just in that, not just what you're saying, but wouldn't it be nice if some of the... If a number of the tribal law enforcement agencies had won some of these cases similar to the way the sheriff departments have. In other words, to have more say-so over law enforcement matters on their lands. I mean, that would be important, I think. That would probably be as important as any of these financial concerns, to show, look, we govern these areas.
Yeah.
You know, we uphold the law of these areas. I mean, I think, like I said, that a number of these tribal law enforcement agencies should have the power that county sheriffs have.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, especially whenever you're talking about ruling over federal land.
Yeah.
You know, because it's still in federal trust land, and that's basically where their jurisdiction would be. And I think probably the biggest problem with tribal law enforcement is the way that our trust land, our Indian land, has been kind of patchwork quilted out, you know, from all the years of allotments to getting cut into smaller pieces and people selling it off and, you know, all these different things. So you have tribes like the Cheyenne Arapaho tribes that cover 10 counties that it would be really difficult to have, I guess, tribal law enforcement just for those few little spots. And it may take a couple hours for them to get there if you know, you're way out in some rural part where you just don't have somebody on duty. And that's been a big problem with the BIA, is whenever something happens on federal trust land, it just takes them so long to get there.
Yeah.
By the time they get there, everything's already, I mean, it's already wrapped up. You know, they're just kind of...
But some tribes, they still have more, they're more contiguous on the lands they have.
Yeah.
And at least for those, if they had that authority.
Well, those are, you know, like the reservation tribes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's really one of the biggest things that differentiates Oklahoma tribes from... almost every other tribe.
Yeah.
Because it is still, you know, everybody in one spot, and, you know, it's one big piece of land, that's the reservation. And in Oklahoma, it's just so, it's spread out, and everybody just kind of integrates, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, well, like I said, I think this is going to be a big case. I think that I think it's going to be a landmark case.
I do too. If this is not, I think that in the next few years you will have a case like this. And again, it may be on drugs, it may be on abortion, it may be on gun rights, we don't know. But once you have a definite case that comes through that favors the states, and you have a few, it will affect every one of these other areas, I think, as well.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch, and we're definitely going to keep an eye on it. So, well, thank you, Dr. Crow. That'll do it for today's Crow's Nest, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right. Thanks a lot.